Hello and welcome to Off the Bench with me, Ronnie Barber, here on Lighthouse Netcast. Our guest today on the show is Graham Daniels, otherwise known as Dano, who's the General Director of Christians in Sport. He's been a professional footballer, a football manager, a broadcaster, and now runs Christians in Sport, a role that has him preaching and talking all over the world. Today he talks about growing up in Wales, becoming a Christian, his playing career, and how he sees the future of Christians in Sport. All that, plus we have some great music. Here's Clean Bandit, Rather Be.
We're a thousand miles from comfort. We have traveled land and sea. But as long as you are with me, there's no place I'd rather be. I'd rather be.
Give love.
And Give Love. Coming up, we've got Barlow Girl, Erasure, and a great track from Avicii. That's right here on Lighthouse Netcast, the soundtrack to your day.
Here we go. It was a common story, yeah. Who cares that I changed? Why are people freaking out?
Barlow Girl and 5 Minutes of Fame. I'm Ronnie Barber and this is Off the Bench right here on Lighthouse Netcast. Our guest today is Graham Daniels, the General Director of Christians in Sport. I caught up with him at his home in Cambridgeshire.
So I was looking at your biog. So you've got a degree in philosophy. You've been a footballer. You've been a radio presenter. And you're now running Christians in Sport. It's not a bad biog, all in all.
The reason I did philosophy was I could train at football every day. I was supposed to do law. But when I got there to Cardiff University, it was 4 days lectures all the time. So I thought, I've got to do something where you can only go 5 or 6 lectures a week, so you can train every day. So that's why I ended up doing philosophy, and the rest was easy. You're unemployable with a philosophy degree, so you have to take whatever comes your way.
Tell me about growing up in Wales then. Which part of Wales and what kind of upbringing did you have?
I had a great upbringing. Great. I lost both my parents now, and it becomes a winsome thing, doesn't it? You think about it and the beauty of them. They were just working people. Dad was a steel worker all his life, tin plate steel, industrial South Wales, Llanelli. Mum, school canteen, worked her life around us. Fabulous people, chapel going people in the culture, Welsh speaking. I was fortunate, I say it like that. I know it's a debatable point, that I was in a system at school where at 11, you got the chance to go to a sort of grammar school system, it was called in the UK, and the chance to... I ended up at school then with boys. It was a boys' school with the doctor's sons and all that stuff. And it just meant you got access to a world that you wouldn't have got access to because of the generation I lived in. So it was just a marvellous parents, great town I grew up in, Sport, rugby especially. And a fabulous school, which set me up for life.
Did you have any hint there? Because I was trying to kind of get some kind of connection with you growing up and your faith now. Mm. Whether, you know, was mum and dad regular churchgoers, or were you kind of, did you meet somebody later on? So as a child, did you go to church?
Yeah, because at the time I was growing up, which is 60s and 70s really, about 15-20% of the population spoke Welsh. But that 20% or so was still a church-going community, whereas the English-speaking Welsh, as you might say, there was less church-going. It had already kicked in. But we grew up going to a Welsh Baptist church all our childhood, really. My mum was a very keen Christian. Dad was a church-goer. And later in life became a Christian in his own right, if you like. But no, it was very much a normal part of weekly routine for my sister and I.
Did it mean anything when you were growing up? Was it one of those routines that can happen when you're a child?
It was a routine, of course, because it's what we knew and what we did, and we just didn't bat an eyelid. And then getting to one's teens, that's the age, isn't it, at which you push the boundaries. And I said I didn't want to go. And it was to upset my mother. And I stopped going mid-teens. There wasn't football or rugby on Sunday because it was pre that era. But, of course, then I was in the big school and most people never went near church, and it started to feel a bit uncool. So I didn't go after 14 or 15 until a few years later.
And what about school? Influences there, faith and football?
Well, lots of influences at school. Probably the biggest one in retrospect was the head teacher, who was an incredible man. I'll give you an example. I wanted to be a footballer, and I could have left school at 16 to go and play in Bristol. And I wanted to go, and I actually left school at the end, at the age of 16, after my summer exams, and nobody wanted me to leave. Mum and dad were saying, stay on. The head teacher, though, got education, you know, and he was the one saying, don't leave. And, you know, he came to my home, it's a boys' school of 800 boys. He came to my home to talk to me and my parents. And get this, he spoke to Cardiff City to get me to play for Cardiff City during the sixth form, age 17 and 18 at school, so that I could stay at school, go to Cardiff in the vacations, and he cut a deal for me to play football so I could stay at school. So when you think that man had 800 boys in his school, what a giant of a man. So he was he wouldn't have said it at the time because he was the head teacher, isn't it? But he was probably the biggest influence in me because he would, time after time, he'd be saying our school's about excellence and honesty and integrity and celebrating success. And as a kid, you don't think anything of it. But you look back and you say, that man probably put backbone in me and thousands of boys.
We close our eyes and fantasize to see.
Erasure and Sacred. This is Lighthouse Netcast, and you're listening to Off the Bench with me, Ronnie Barber. Back to our guest, Graham Daniels from Christians of Sport. I next asked him how he became a Christian.
I met a boy, well, the three or four boys at school, as a sporty boy. Everyone you looked up to was older than you and sporty, unless they were your age and better than you at sport, but I didn't like to think anyone fitted that bill. But he was the older boy who was a very good sportsman. There were three boys in particular, two very good cricketers of my age group at school, both of whom were unashamed about being a Christian right through school. It was quite a bold thing as a teenager. They made a big influence on me, though that I would never have confessed to them at the time. I think the third boy was a tipping point only because he was a few years older than me. He was an extremely good rugby player and cricketer. And when you're a boy of 14 or 15 and somebody's 18, they're a man in that sort of school setting. And he once, I was picked for the school cricket team when I was about 15, and they were short and they needed an 11th man. So I was asked to go. I thought I was going because I was good, but I was actually called because I lived near school. But I went, and of course you don't know any of the boys. So I sat on the minibus for 12 people, one teacher to drive and 11 boys. And this chap sat next to me there and back. It was a 50-mile journey. And he's a quiet chap. And on the way back, just out of the place where we played in Cardiff, I said to him, "What did you do at the weekend?" He said, "Well, played cricket Saturday, went to church Sunday." Now, I'd stopped going, and I was surprised that a boy this cool, this great at sport, coolest boy in school, was actually willing to go to church. So I said, "Does your mother still make you go?" And he said, "No, I go because I follow..." A little hesitation. He said, "No, I go because I follow Jesus." And I thought to myself, 45 miles to go. You know, I'm trapped. But the reality was that boy, I was 15. I would say I came to an adult faith or a faith in my own right at 21. It was pre-email and Facebook and Twitter and so on. Mobiles weren't in existence. But that chap wrote to me very regularly after I'd left home to Cardiff and then Cambridge. Faithfully, really. And he, as a person, probably played the biggest factor in helping me after my mother and her example as a child in coming to her faith.
And then from leaving school and that turning point, was it kind of some kind of synchronicity going on then? Do you think you're becoming a man, going to higher education, meeting somebody, finding something real in your faith?
Yeah, definitely. Even though I joke about the philosophy and playing football at Cardiff City, the great thing was I was able to stay in school until I was 18, do a next block of exams that you do. So I was in a position to go to university. And again, I would really, as a young man, I wanted to get off and play football as soon as possible because I was the odd one out at Cardiff City because I was still at school. And then if I was going to move to Cardiff, which is about 60 miles from where I was growing up, I wouldn't be a full-time pro because I'd go to university in the afternoon. So it was a decision to make. And again, my head teacher and the influence of him and going to do law and then ending up doing philosophy. That whole process meant that perhaps providentially I was doing a subject which I didn't know anything about, philosophy, but it did help you to ask bigger questions. And now I've left home, I'm living in Diggs, I'm full-time at a football club, but shooting off every afternoon to study. And I think what happened in that 2 or 3 years was that I had a bit of time on my hands. I got to see what it really looks like to be in full-time professional sport. I was a slightly odd one out still, but I was there every day. And of course, you see when you're in it full-time that it's a hard, hard world. It's an extremely competitive world, and it's a painful world, and spend a lot of your time frightened that you're not going to get picked or you're out of form and your reputation's going to suffer and your friends will say, "Why can't you get in the first team if you've been there for a certain amount of time?" So actually you begin to realise quite a fearful occupation at the elite level of performance of any kind, mixed with thinking about the world, what's the point of it, the philosophy, the meaning of it. So I think all that process through to the age of 21 was helpful. Finally, leaving home, leaving Wales at 21, I signed for Cambridge United. Then I was a first 11 footballer, and I wasn't a student anymore. And I think it's at this stage that the tipping point really comes for saying, "I've got to be a Christian."
Feeling my way through the darkness, guided by a beating heart. I can't tell where the journey will end, but I know where to start. They tell me I'm too young to understand. They say I'm caught up in a dream. Well, life will pass me by if I don't open up my eyes. So that's fine by me. So wake me up. When I'm wiser and I'm older, all this time
I tried carrying the weight of the world, but I only have two hands. Hope I get the chance to travel the world, but I don't have any plans. Wish that I could stay forever this young, not afraid to close my eyes. Life's a game made for everyone, and love is the prize. So wake me up.
Listening to Off the Bench with me, Ronnie Barber. Our special guest today is Graham Daniels, and we just heard how he became a Christian. Then we moved on to his professional football career.
I think that's probably formed. I'm 52 now, so it's 30 years ago that I'd left being a student, moved from Wales to Cambridge, left all my family ties really behind then. And I touched on it just briefly in that last answer. I really did work out that play is different to sport. The freedom to play as a child when you go to your local park, when you play for your school team, when you just can't wait to play football. That lovely, raw, childlike thing in us, play. Sport was a different animal completely. Professional sport was a world where within a year it was work. If you were only, you only felt as strong a human being as your last performance. You weren't a person who was, had inherent value, was valuable just because they were a human being. And it dawned on me that all my life, really, from being a little boy of 8 or 9, you know, best in your school, the best in your village, the best in your town, you're in the county thing, you're in the national setup, you're a footballer for such and such a team. You start to realise, gosh, I hang my hat on this. This is who I am. And if this ever goes wrong, who will I be? So actually, I think coming to Christian faith came out of that process, and having decided that I must trust Jesus Christ, that experience has formed the rest of my life. It didn't make me a better player. What it made me was somebody who could grapple with the fact that regardless of how well the world thinks I've done, what the paper said, what job I've got, whether I've got a new contract or not, I had to fight every day to say, doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. What matters is I am loved by Jesus, regardless of what I perform for any other human being or fail in my performance. And I think at 30 years later, every day I have to fight that fight. I have to fight that fight every day. I'm loved unconditionally, not because of my reputation or my job. That's what being a Christian has done for me. And that's, it's a long answer, but what it's caused me to do is to flip over for the last 30 years into what Christians in sport must do. stand for.
I'm interested in that. You know, that whole professional sport becoming a job, and also I wondered because, and I met you kind of when you became a radio presenter, and we won't talk too much about that. It wasn't a great time, but I met you, and I remember you saying to me when we were having our discussions and chats that you kind of you realised you were not going to be. Right, frontline, you're not going to be Premiership.
Yes.
Now, that's a tough, tough moment for any person, especially somebody who's invested, you know, their childhood in sport and then, you know, university, and then to suddenly say, you know what, I can't be the very... I can't reach the top.
Hmm. Well, I'm nervous of the way I answer this, Ron, because it's in some ways it can sound so pessimistic, but I'm going to say it anyway. The higher you go, I wasn't high, you're right. I was playing for Cambridge United. We were relegated from what's now the Championship to the fourth division over two or three seasons. So it was a terrible time. However, it strikes me that on the greasy pole of success in culture, journalism, broadcasting, sport, the arts, as you start to climb up that pole, it is so competitive that everything in the person who's doing it, and I've met, I don't think I'm exaggerating now, in 30 years, I've talked to thousands of people involved at the highest level of competitive areas of society. You're always a day away from failure. All the time. Every time you put the shirt on, you talk about broadcasting. Every time the red light goes on in the studio and the mic opens, you are one show, one performance away from failing and getting a bad report, a bad audience, and you're out of work. That's how it works. So it's totally informed the way I look at sport. And it's hard not to be repetitive on this because I think the Christian faith must be about saying to the 13-year-old who's on the pathway, the best hockey player in their region, the best cricketer, the Premier League footballer, it's about saying to that woman or man in all sorts of forms and ways, 10,000 times, now listen really clearly, if you really mess it up, if you really mess it up now, Jesus loves you regardless of your performance. Because the reality is, however good you are, you will hit the wall one day. You could be the best player in the world and your career must win at some point. So we're all one day away from that all the time. The joy I see in somebody who learns that Jesus loves them unconditionally is massive as that penny drops in.
Why are you striving these days? Don't turn away. Why are you looking for love? Why are you still searching as if I'm not enough? To where will you go, child? Tell me where will you run? To where will you go? I'll be by your side wherever you fall in the dead of night. Whenever you call, then please don't fight. These hands that are holding you, my hands are holding you. Look at these hands. Grave.
holding you.
A great tune from 10th Avenue North. And if you love your music, don't forget to tune into the Saturday Rock Show on Lighthouse Netcast from 8 p.m. UK time. 4 hours of the best Christian and Christian-friendly music. You will love it. Today, our guest and off the bench is Graham Daniels from Christians in Sport. Graham's been a football manager as well, and I asked him how his faith had helped him manage.
The art of management for me has always been never generalise. Never generalise. So never walk into a changing room or an office, a whole staff of people, and say, you've all been poor today, or all of you need to pull your socks up, or you're all fantastic. It's the laziest, cheapest management technique in the world. And Fergie, you know people who work for Fergie, the hairdryer is the exception. And people who worked for him will say, he knew you as a person. He really knew you. And if he could catch you doing something right, he would just say, well done. And a well done from him, no big words, no superlatives, no lots of praise, well done. Look in the eye, well done. Was individual, personal, specific for something you had done. Well done for tracking back. So my approach, I managed from about 28 years of age to 51 till last year, really, when I went to be a director of Cambridge United. So it's a long time in a sort of semi-pro level of football. But the joy was, you don't see people every day, you see them twice or three times a week, but the joy was twofold. One, catching people doing things right. Simple, well done. And why it was well done. As much as you could. The flip of that is that when you caught them doing it wrong, without ranting and raving, you say, you didn't do that, can you explain why? That won't do. That was one joy. And the second was the number of young men I found, which you indicated earlier, who had dropped out of football. They'd all been young professionals, hadn't made the cut at 16, 18, 21. And giving them back a love of play when they felt, an incredible thing to say, because they'd be the best kids in their cities, but they would feel ashamed because they'd feel they'd failed because they didn't get a contract for a big pro team. And even though they were the top 1% in the country, they were ashamed and would give up. And my great joy was getting that kind of boy, giving him a year's worth of sheer confidence building and laughter and joy in the game. And you could guarantee within 2 years of that, you'd have this great player on your hand at that level of football. A great player. And he's not on the scrap heap, giving up the sport because all it had done had hurt him. So I've loved it every single minute, even when you're gutted on Saturday night comes, you've lost. There's 100 people watching. You don't care if it's 1 or 10,000. All you know is you lost and Saturday night's a write-off. I've loved it even then, you know, because it gives you that contact with people.
So let's move on to the next stage in your life, Christians in Sport. Mm-hmm. Just tell me, because I didn't get that from you before. How did that relationship initially start then with Christians in Sport?
I was playing at Brentford for Cambridge on a wet Tuesday night, and I'm sure we lost. And I was heading back for the bus from the changing room, so it was like 15 yards, and there's always a couple of security people. Not that they were needed. There's always a couple of people there. And, you know, the odd fan wants an autograph of the players and all that. And there was a chap there who was called Stuart Weir, which I then found out, who was part of this sort of starting off of Christians in Sport, which I hadn't heard of. And he just said, excuse me, Graham, my name's Stuart Weir. I gather you're a Christian. I'd done an interview in the paper to say I was a Christian, local paper, Cambridge. I said, yes, I am. And he said, well, I belong to Christians in Sport. Here's my card. Perhaps you could give me a call. So I met them then when I was about 22, 23. It had been going not very long at that point. So that's how I started getting to know Christians in Sport. There is a funny story in that a couple of months later, the guy who was his boss, I guess, called Andrew Wingfield Digby, who started Christians in Sport, came to Cambridge United to see me. And I'd been saying in public I was a Christian for about 6 months. And every Saturday you'd play somebody and I'd see old pals at different clubs and he'd say, isn't anyone here who's a Christian? Now, in the end, I had to stop asking because I never was. So I started saying, is there anyone here who goes to church? It was an easier, but still it wasn't. And so this chap, Winfield Digby, shows up and he says, you're a Christian? I say, yes, I am. He says, well, I'm Stuart Weir's colleague. I said, oh, great. Great to meet you. And he says, did you know there are other Christians playing professional football? Now, I've been looking for months, hadn't found anyone. 90 league clubs. So I thought, oh, brilliant, this little guy knows everybody. I said, fantastic, how many? He said, four. Four? I thought he was going to say 40. And he said, four. I said, well, who are they? And he named three. I said, well, who's the fourth? He said, you. So that was my start of thinking, well, maybe we ought to do something about this.
You listen to Lighthouse Netcast. Our guest today on Off the Bench, Graham Daniels, the General Director of Christians in Sport. In this last part of our interview, I asked him what the future holds for him and Christians in Sport.
Well, the great thing, isn't it? We were talking about football management earlier and treating everyone as an individual. And I think all work everywhere hinges on the right people. Really, succession's all about the right people. For me, it's been over the 12 years of the job I do now and over longer working with Christians in Sport, I've just always scouted out the younger men and women who I think are the leaders of the next generation. So actually, there's probably two ways of looking at it. One, reaching the world of sport for Christ is our vision. Well, I hope that's not going to change in the next generation. Really taking sport seriously. Really taking sports people seriously. Being as relaxed about talking to somebody who says they're an atheist in a governing body of sport as you would be talking in church about Christ and sport is important to me. You've got to be able to speak with integrity to everybody and say, look, being a Christian in sport is a really good thing, whoever you're talking to. Reaching out to that whole world of sport for Christ is the vision. And then I think secondly and finally on it, if I was run over by a bus tomorrow, I know there are some really, really great people, much better than me, who'd step in to my shoes and run the organisation better than me. So it's that individual, catching people doing things right, watching people of good character, and giving them room to flourish. So in some ways, there's no question we're going to be a lot better off when I'm out of the way. But my successor did it for me. He was never interested in his own, this is where I'm going, he was interested in the cause. So God's pretty much knows what he's doing. And if you put the right people out there, then he'll work through them.
The journey you've been on, and you've never really kind of backed off of decision-making through it. So that day will come, you know, when you actually go, you know, I need to pass on Christians in Sport. Beyond that, then, have you thought personally what you might want to do, where you'll end up?
Well, I love it now. I happen to be the director or a director at Cambridge United, and we're back in the Football League for the first time for quite a while. It's been a very exciting last 12 months. And as we're talking, of course, we played at Wembley twice last season. And as we're talking, we're playing Manchester United in the FA Cup in a couple of days' time. So currently, it's a very exciting period. Looking ahead, I can't run and jump anymore so much. I've done my years as a coach. As long as I've got health and strength, I've been in football all my life. So looking ahead, I will stay in sport. I want to make sport a joy. I want to make it a beautiful thing, not an onerous thing. So I'll continue doing that as long as I can. I'm telling you what I really think about myself now. I've had 30 years of, you know, we can almost go full circle. The philosophy, the sport, the working out the relationship between sport, faith, sociology, psychology. I've never really sat down and really given time to consolidate what I think about that. At Christian Sport, we've put a couple of books together over the years and so on. If I had the health and strength, I'd love to really attack that and leave something, having been the sort of second generation through the Christian Sport thing from the late 70s to now, I'd love to do some serious reflection on that with hindsight. So if I keep some health and strength and maybe have a bit of time, I might have a crack at some writing and thinking about that.
Smell.
Fighting Instinct and Back to You. That's it for this edition of Off the Bench. My thanks to our guest, Graham Daniels from Christians in Sport. If you'd like to email the show, you can do it via the website, lighthousenetcast.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Ronnie Barber. See you next time for another edition of Off the Bench, right here on Lighthouse Netcast.
I wear your winter coat, the one you love to wear, so I keep feeling close to us beyond compare. The moment's waking up, you catch me in your eyes. That beauty on my pillow that holds me in the night. And I will find my strength to untape my mouth when I used to be afraid of the words. But with you I've learned just to let it out. Now my heart is ready to burst, 'cause I feel like I'm ready for love. And I wanna be your everything and more. And I know every day I say it, but I just want you to be sure that I am yours. And if I be feeling heavy, you take me from the dark. Your arms, they keep me steady, so nothing could fall apart. And I will find my strength to untape my mouth when I used to be afraid of the words. But with you I've learned just to let it out. Now my heart is ready to burst, 'cause I feel like I'm ready for love. And I wanna be your everything and more. And I know every day I say it, but I just want you to be sure that I am yours. That I